Thanks for listening to Last Call Confessions. This podcast is intended for adult audiences, and there may be language or references that some listeners may find disturbing. Guest views are their own and not necessarily reflective of the Last Call Confessions team. Discretion is advised. Welcome to this episode of Last Call Confessions. I'm one of your hosts, Austin Rieger, and today, Lauren Serenko and I sit down with Team Canada skeleton athlete, Madison Charney. Maddie, welcome to the podcast. I would love if you could introduce yourself to all of our listeners.
Hey, my name is Madison Charney. I'm an athlete on the Canadian National Skeleton Team. I have been around the industry for 7 years, spent seven glorious years with Cowboys in marketing. I'm a dog mom to two wonderful dogs, and I have the luxury of traveling for work, which is amazing.
Awesome. Maddie, welcome to Last Call Confessions. We are very excited to have you today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Great to be here.
So I think like where we should start is so obvious. How did you settle on pursuing a sport where you fly down an ice track head first at speeds of 100 kilometers per hour?
140 plus, actually. I'll just correct you on that. Thanks. Yeah, it's okay. I mean, I've only gone 139.8 this week, so I haven't actually gone 140, but yeah, I'm still pretty quick. This is probably the number one question I get asked, actually, and the answer will surprise you. So I'm from the glorious town of Brooks, Alberta, where it smells like money. And my parents moved us when I was in grade school. So I was going into grade 9 when we moved to Calgary. And as we all know, it takes literally forever to get anywhere in the city. It's like 30 minutes to get anywhere. So my sporting life really, really took a decline in that grade 9 year. And my mom randomly saw a sign that said, "Do you want your kid to go to the Olympics?" And it was for luge. And my mom was like, "Well, yeah, sure. Why not?" So she asked me if I wanted to try luge. And I was like, "I don't know what it is, but sure." And then she calls Luge Canada, and they actually only take kids under the age of 12, I believe. Like, they want to start them really young. And I was older than that, but they're like, "Yeah, skeleton's always looking." So my mom found a skeleton school is what it's called. And I went to my first skeleton school, literally had no idea what it was when we went to COP. And then I'm ripping down the track. And you go from, it's like 3/4 of the way down in Calgary, when Calgary actually existed. So you still go about 100K. And my mom said, when I got to the bottom, I took my helmet off, and she said my eyes were like the size of my face. And she said to herself, like, "Oh shit, she's hooked." And yeah, sure enough, that's 10 years ago now. And I made my way onto the national team a few short years after that. And I have competed in many countries around the world and seen places that people only dream of.
This all started because you passed a roadside sign.
Yeah, it was actually my mom.
"Do you want your kids to go to the Olympics?"
Yeah. And my mom saw it and she was like, "Yeah." She's like, "That'd be great." I'm sure she knew what luge was. Like, she grew up in Calgary, and you know, she was around for the 88 games. Mm-hmm. So she, you know, I'm sure had an idea of the sliding sports, but I didn't. Like, small town kid from Brooks. No, hell no, I don't know what that is.
So, and I might have missed it. How old were you again when this happened?
Or I was 15 when I started sliding, because we had practices really late. Like, sometimes our ice time wasn't until 10 o'clock, and my poor parents were driving me to Winsport during the week and having to, you know, drop me off at training and pick me up late. So yeah, blessed to have the parents that I do.
So you mentioned that you were traveling a lot with, obviously, mm-hmm. the sports and stuff. I know.
Super lucky.
Yeah. I know for a fact that you were in Germany, Winterberg, I think it was, mm-hmm. in 2014 for the World Junior Championships, was it?
Yeah. So I've been to a couple World Junior Championships. So in skeleton, juniors are considered 23 and under. So you have up until the age of 23. So I was lucky enough to attend quite a few World Junior Championships. And obviously it's all these young athletes from many countries around the world that are just excited to meet other people and to get to race in really cool places. So Winterberg isn't necessarily an exciting track or an exciting town. It's small, and it's really close to the Black Forest, actually, in Germany. And yeah, the town's really small. It's a bit of a ski village, but skiing hasn't really been amazing there. They haven't had a ton of snow. And yeah, sometimes the parties there are the wildest because it is so small. So actually the same year when the first year I went to World Juniors there, which was 2015, I believe. So that year was the same year that one of the most renowned female skeleton athletes retired. So her name was Anya Huber, and she was sponsored by Red Bull, which is very rare in the sport of skeleton. And Red Bull threw her a retirement party in Winterberg. So they rented out this bar and they made it into an ice castle. So they literally made an ice castle inside of a bar. And of course, drinks were free all night. And that was one of the wildest times I think I've had on tour. It was so much fun. Everyone was just there to wish Anya an amazing retirement. Ended up losing my passport, my EpiPen, like everything just went flying on the middle of the dance floor. Got it all back. Thank God, people were amazing. But yeah, it was Winterberg was definitely an interesting spot that you would never expect to have the time that you do there. 2015, I think I would have been 20. When was I born? 21. Yeah, it would have been 21. Yeah.
So 21, lighting it up in an ice castle.
I never imagined my life to be the way it is, for sure. Yeah, so. I counted the amount of races that I've done. And the last IBSF, so that's like our major governing body, the last race I did was my 89th race. Jesus. On the books. So that's not including like team races and races that we do throughout the year just within our organization. That's mm-hmm. like on the books international races. And yeah, it was 89 races, which is wild.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. You've obviously spent a ton of time and competed, trained everything in Whistler. Outside of the competition training lifestyle, do you get to have mm-hmm. some fun when you're out there too?
Yeah, I mean, it's Whistler. Everyone comes here to have a good time, and the track, it helps that the track is the fastest ice it literally in the entire world, 140 kilometers an hour plus. So you go hard at training and seems like you go hard after training too. Obviously the ski hill is here and the village is usually bumping during COVID. It's been a little bit more relaxed and we haven't been able to experience the nightlife, but usually in the years past, you know, people are here and they're going from sunrise past sundown again till sunrise. So yeah, I've definitely had some great experiences here. I think the most memorable was probably Worlds in 2018. So it was my very first time going to World Championships, and it just so happened to be in Whistler. We had to do a race off in the middle of the year for the spots in, you know, in that race, and I was able to kind of, you know, one up myself and make it on the team, which was amazing. And I'm so happy I did that. But the after party was definitely crazy. So there's a bar at the bottom of the ski hill called Longhorns. And it's literally like you can ski to the bar and you just pop your skis off and walk in the bar. And it was after all the competitions, obviously, like we make sure we get the business out of the way first before we really enjoy ourselves. And we're in this bar all day long. I think we went for breakfast and then ended up at the bar. And they have these champagne guns. So they literally put a bottle of champagne in what looks like a plastic machine gun. And then you just shake it and it sprays everywhere. So we were with someone that, you know, wanted everyone to have a good time. And they bought a couple of the girls some champagne guns. And sure enough, we start firing these champagne guns off. And some people are really excited, but some of the women in the bar were not so excited, which unfortunately gets me going even more. Like, man or woman, if they aren't enjoying what I'm doing, I might push the limits a little bit and go a little bit harder. So we did, and we ended up on the table. We were dancing, having a great time, and they just kept sending these champagne guns over to our table, and it was like a war on the patio between tables for these champagne guns. Yeah, it was awesome. Whistler's always a great time. I did win my first race here as well, so I think it has a special place in my heart.
I can't imagine you being the type of person that if someone was a little annoyed with you, you would just make sure you poke that bear a little bit harder.
Yeah. You know, as I get older, I'm learning when I can poke and when not to poke. And it doesn't help when you have bobsleigh teammates there that are big and strong. So yeah.
There's nothing better than when people are like uncomfortable, like you make them more uncomfortable.
So I think that's, I'm not going to say a problem, but my personality, I definitely try to bring out the sides of people that they wouldn't normally, you know, let mm-hmm. others enjoy, I would say. And I really like to, you know, push people to the edge of their comfort zone and yeah. exactly do exactly what you said and just, you know, keep poking at them until they're either having a really good time or they have to take a step away. That's how I've had some of my greatest memories and met some of my best friends. So I will not apologize for who I am.
No, I think that's great. I love doing that too. So being an international competitor, you've had the chance to travel a lot of amazing places and experience the culture and the parties. Mm-hmm. What have been some of your favorites?
My favorites. I'd say like the most unique place I think that I have gotten to experience is St. Moritz. So it's in Switzerland. They call it the top of the world. And I kid you not, like it's probably sunny there 99% of the time. So it's in, what mountain range is that? The Alps, duh. It's in the Swiss Alps.
I don't even know and, how
it
thinks.
Yeah, it's in the Swiss Alps. And you, to get there, there's like 20 different ways to get there, but you can either drive your car onto a train and the train takes you through the mountain. So you literally drive your car onto a flatbed and then you're through the mountain most of the time, but for a bit of the ride, you get to see the mountain range if it's clear. So normally you have to get on the train when the roads are really bad and you can't actually drive your vehicle there.
Do you stay in your car mm-hmm. when you get
so
on the train?
So you're literally like, you drive your car onto a train bed and you just put it in park. Train? Yeah, your car is like literally on a flatbed on the train and then your car stays.
You don't
get out of your car. Yeah.
So it's like when you go on the like
yeah, ships it's like a ferry. It's basically a ferry, but a ferry. On the ships that transport your car. Yeah, it's a ferry. So it's basically a ferry on a train, which is I haven't been able to do, but yeah, it's pretty cool. And the other way is you drive, obviously, but it feels like you go up and up and up and up and up and up when you're driving, which is really fun. But also if it's treacherous and the weather is not ideal, it's terrifying to get there. But you start getting closer to St. Moritz and, you know, you pass a horse and buggy carriage kind of like trucking along the side of the road. And then all of a sudden a Maserati passes you at like triple the speed limit. And you're kind of like, what is going on? And then you go up another big hill and you pass a Maserati dealership. And then there's this big castle on the left and there's a big lake on the left and there's horses on the lake. And then all of a sudden you're really confused. And then you look out your window and you see a lady walking her tiny fluffy dog and she's got a Burberry jacket on and so does her dog. So St. Moritz, the money is there. Yeah, very, very bougie.
I want to be in a Burberry or fur jacket across the ice, like walking my little dog with a bottle of champagne in my hand.
You would fit right in. Like that would be so ideal.
Big, like Russian fur hat.
Yes.
And big Tom Ford sunglasses and just.
And like, moon boots, like all of the highest of high fashion is in St. Moritz.
Pets around.
Yes, exactly. So St. Moritz is actually the birthplace of Skeleton too, which is crazy. So they have this thing called the Cresta and it was an old boys club. So you had to be male to join this club. And Cresta is insane. People have died on the Cresta. Many people have died on the Cresta actually. And it started off, I think, as an English gentleman's club because St. Moritz, people come from England, Russia, really anywhere in Europe. They all come to St. Moritz to party and to vacation. So yeah, there's this thing called the Cresta and that's where Skeleton really started. And the track that they've built that is specifically for Skeleton and bobsleigh now is actually, it's the only natural track in the whole world that is on the circuit and they build it out of ice and snow every single year. So the corners go the same way and the track design is the same every year, but they have to erase all the track records every year because it's not the exact same. Even though the corners go the same way, the length is not the same. The way things are positioned is not the same. The slope's not the same. So it's really, really cool. And there's no echo from the concrete and your sled when you're sliding. So it's literally like wind when you're sliding, which doesn't happen anywhere else.
That's crazy to think of. So like when you're on that course, you get to the chance, I guess I'm a nostalgic person. So I love this kind of stuff. You essentially are on a track that no one else will ever ride again.
Exactly. And since there's no refrigeration on the track, last year for our World Cup there, it was like 10 degrees Celsius and the track is melting. It's literally melting and you have to slide on it. So they have no control over the ice temperatures there and things like that. Like the white office, you can't control the weather and there's no refrigeration system. So it's literally a different track every single year, which is so cool. And you start in one town and you end in another and the corners don't have numbers. They have names. So there's one corner named Telephone and it's after the most famous corner in the entire world, which is called Horseshoe. So it's literally a big horseshoe. And, back in the day, crashes happened there very significantly. So they put a telephone there so you could get out and call and say, hey, I crashed. Can you come and get me? And the corner after Telephone is called Shamrock because you're lucky if you've made it through.
And you slide this.
Yeah, we slide this track. Yeah, it's also really fast.
It's melting.
Yeah, some days while it's melting, but some days when it's like minus 30, the weather there is, it's wild. Usually it's the coldest place we go. The air is so thin and it's just really, really cold. But every once in a while you get this massive heat wave. And yeah, last year it happened to be really warm for us. But yeah, I mean, the nightlife there is also a good time because of all the money and all the people that are there to literally just have a good time. So yeah, I was there for New Year's Eve actually in 2017. And that was an experience in itself because fireworks are legal as well during New Year's Eve. And they celebrate, I think it's a whole week long of celebration. So people start going hard a couple of days before and they go really hard after. So New Year's Day is even bigger than New Year's Eve in Europe for the most part. And we took a train to the top of this mountain and we tobogganed down the mountain. It's literally like a 10 kilometer toboggan course that you're on, and you're on these crazy toboggans that you have no brakes, and you'd think as a skeleton athlete I'd be good at this, but yeah, there was a few crashes for sure. And we were drinking the Baileys and the Glühwein all day, and it was a great day. And yeah, we ended up shooting fireworks off in the middle of the lake after that, and it was just an experience again that, you know, I never thought I would have. I've been really fortunate to have nights like that.
If you like what you're hearing, please don't forget to give us a like or favorite and a 5-star review on your favorite streaming platform. It helps us out a ton and gives us better access to producing more great podcasts for our listeners. While you're at it, make sure to check out our Instagram at Last Call Confessions and give us a follow for all the up-to-date info on the podcasts. Maddie, outside of competition, you've obviously worked in the summers in a marketing role for a few different companies. One of those companies is Cowboys and Cowboys Music Festival. You've had the chance to meet a ton of celebrities, and I know you've even left your mark on a couple. Is it true that you actually dressed up as fast food to meet Guy Fieri?
This is very true. So yeah, Guy Fieri was judging this cook-off, this Cowboys cook-off, and I was tasked, along with one of my other, you know, allies, Gabby, to go and find people to meet Guy Fieri. And obviously you guys know me, I'm a boisterous personality and I'm not just going to do anything on average. So we saw a Burger and Fries costume and we said, you know, why wouldn't we find people in a Burger and Fries costume that want to go meet Guy Fieri? What's going to get you more excited to meet Guy Fieri than two young women dressed as a Burger and Fries? Mm-hmm. Nothing. Sure enough, we got, you know, the group together. And then at the end of it, Scarlett surprised me. And she goes, do you want to meet Guy Fieri? And I was like, yes, please. So sure enough, we go up, we're the end of the line. And I'm wearing this box of fries, which is literally a red box painted red with some yellow pool noodles sticking out of it, which is great. Also doesn't look like I have pants on because I was wearing a skirt. So it literally looks like I'm just wearing this box of fries and a top, which is even better. So we get up to Guy Fieri and he's kind of a quiet guy. Guy is kind of quiet. And get up to see him and, you know, I'm excited and we take our picture and all I want him to do is to verbally say, welcome to Flavortown. And I'm like, Guy, can you just say welcome to Flavortown for me? Sure enough, does me one better, pulls out his pen and he decorates my entire fry box and he signs it and says, welcome to Fry Flavortown. Writes Cowboys on it, draws some flames and he was excited. He was smiling and that was... it was a big highlight for sure, meeting Guy, who I've seen on the TV 100 times and, you know, really enjoy his cooking. So yeah, that was pretty exciting.
So I want to know, like, true or false, you've been kissed by Scott Disick, I hear.
Oh, it's true. It's true.
Was there tongue?
I have to ask before you get into this story, because yeah. I have no idea who Scott Disick is really, what? Other than that he was like
Lord
on
Disick?
the Kardashians.
You don't know Lord Disick?
No. So for everyone else who's like me, that's not up on their pop culture, do you want to explain who Scott Disick is first?
So Scott and Courtney were on the rocks. And of course, because they're celebrities, you know, everyone's covering all their shit and you're seeing all their stuff in TMZ and what's happening and whatever. I wasn't really paying attention to it, but I knew Scott Disick was coming. We brought Scott Disick in and Scott Disick flew in, you know, regular air. Not sure why they didn't fly in a private jet, but whatever, not my concern. And the airline lost his luggage. How the fuck do you lose Scott Disick's luggage? I have no idea. So anyways, we get this call. Well, I get a call from Scarlett and Scarlett's like, Mayday, Mayday. They've lost Scott's luggage. So she says, we have to figure this out really quick. And it's a Sunday of a long weekend. And we're like, where are we going to take Scott Disick shopping that he's not going to get absolutely mauled? So sure enough, Scarlett calls a friend at Holt Renfrew and they open Holt Renfrew after hours for us to take Scott Disick shopping. So Vari, one of the other marketing assistants, and I are waiting, literally like little girls outside of Holt Renfrew for Scott to show up. Shows up in this SUV, and him and the entourage get out, and they've clearly been enjoying themselves on the plane. I won't get into it much more than that, but yeah, it was clear they were having a good time. They open the doors to Holt, lock them behind us, and we just take them straight up to the men's department. And I kid you not, him and his associate just went around and started pulling everything and anything and throwing it on the counter. And it was like Canada Goose jackets, Canada Goose pants. And I'm like, it's 20 degrees outside. What are you doing? Anyways, they get this massive pile of stuff on the counter and Scott goes to pay. His credit card gets declined, which was kind of funny, but obviously it's because they're in Canada and it's like a massive charge. Like it was a couple grand. And I'm sure the credit card company was like, no, this isn't Scott. So they try another card and I think they had to try like 3 or 4 cards before the transaction actually went through, which was funny in my eyes. I'm sure it wasn't too funny in their eyes. So yeah, we got them all suited up. We got all their bags in the car and we're about to say goodbye to him. And, you know, we're trying to make sure that he remembers he's in Calgary to go to Cowboys. And he does. And he's like, yeah, we'll see you guys later. And then he asks Vari and I if we want to go back to the hotel with him. And Scarlett looks at us and she's like, yeah, probably not the best idea. Like, we'll just meet them at the club. And Scott's kind of disappointed. And then he leans in and he smooches me right on the lips. And I'm like, and then he goes over to Vari and kisses Vari. And then we literally just shoved him in the SUV and we're like, please make it to Cowboys. And yeah, he made it to Cowboys and he was all together in one piece. So I'm not sure what happened in those couple hours we didn't see him, but yeah, that was definitely a weird and one of a kind experience that Cowboys nightlife brought me. That was weird he's the only celebrity that is forced to kiss on me.
Also on a side note of that, like I hear you love your sleep. Like what girl doesn't though? Mm-hmm. So much that one night you decided to take a nap on your driveway.
Yeah, that was, working at Cowboys has its perks. And one of those perks is that the last night of Stampede, you get to basically go buck wild and let out all the stress that you've been holding in for the last 6 months, planning the craziest and best party you can. And yeah, you literally get to let out all this rage, all the stress, all the happiness. It's such a cathartic release on that last night of Stampede. We stayed up in Sky Suites that night and there's really comfy couches up there. And you know, we had some beverages and that was also the same night that Snoop Dogg was in town. So Snoop has been to Cowboys a few times and he played a show in the tent on the final night of 2015. I was going to say most memorable, but it's also least memorable, I guess, because I don't really have much of a memory of that night. But yeah, we watched Snoop in the tent. And I was at Reba on the Stampede grounds before that and at the rodeo before that. It was a great final day of Stampede for me. And then we were lucky enough to have Snoop Lion play kind of a private show in the club after. And I was lucky enough to be able to attend that show with a friend of mine. And sure enough, we were also having some beverages at that point, because what else are you going to do on the last night of Stampede when you're celebrating the end of a 6 month journey? And I went to the washroom and I came back out and I couldn't find my friend. And then from my friend's perspective, the next thing she knows, I'm on stage grinding with Snoop Dogg. Not sure how that happened, to be honest, but yeah, I got pulled up on stage and there's some photo evidence of me and Snoop having a good time. And so I've never been a tequila fan. I just not something that I'll go for. And I know Lauren's going to be upset at me for that, but yeah, I've never been a tequila fan. And sure enough, I ended up drinking a bunch of Patron by the hand of Snoop Dogg that night, literally bottle to mouth. And yeah, it was an eventful evening. And sure enough, ended up in Sky Suites after that for a bit of time and made my way home safely in a cab. I, made sure that was already prearranged, and I got home and I could not for the life of me get in our garage. So we have the button code on the garage and was not coherent enough to push the buttons on the garage panel. So I said to myself, I'm like, okay, it's 25 degrees outside still at nighttime in July in Canada and Calgary. And I'm just going to sleep on the driveway, because then every time I wake up, I can try the code again. And you know, the more time goes on, maybe the more sober I'll be and the more I'll be able to coherently put in the numbers. So I think it was about 5 a.m. and I probably had only been on the driveway for maybe an hour at that point. I think we got home pretty late that night. And my neighbor, who I've never met, came over. And now I'm wearing short jean shorts, cowboy boots, and a bar top. And he comes over and he pokes my leg. And he's like, "Miss, are you okay? Miss? And he's like trying to wake me up. And I stand up and I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine. I just can't get in my house." So this guy helps me get in the garage. And yeah, I think at one point I tried to go around to the back of my parents' house and stack deck chairs to try and get in on the deck. So I like had this thing in my mind that I was going to climb onto like our third story balcony somehow. But yeah, I ended up sleeping on the driveway. And I did tell my grandma about that one, and she was proud of me. So yeah, I would say that was a win.
As long as grandma's proud of you.
Exactly.
And see, Patron gives you a good night's sleep. What can I?
We have listeners currently tuning in from United States, Australia, Mexico, United Kingdom, G'day. Costa Rica, Hola. Belgium, Hello. Netherlands, Sweden, Hello. Germany, and Greece.
I don't know any Grecian.
That's
Grecian. How do you say hello in Greece? What do they speak?
Lots of those people have no idea what Cowboys is or what Cowboys Music Festival is. So that story will kind of just... Mm-hmm. won't ring true. So can you explain what Cowboys and what Cowboys Music Festival and actually what Stampede is?
I wish I could show someone an experience, because those 10 days that Calgary turns into Stampede and the Cowboys tent goes up and, you know, the city literally turns into a farm. There's hay bales everywhere. And there's people that normally wear suits. They're in jeans and cowboy boots, and they're wearing their hats incorrectly, but they're trying at least, you know? So the city is all in on this 10 days of a journey, I'm going to call it, that has experiences that range from, you have your traditional Western events, because that's how Stampede started. So you have your traditional Western events that include, you know, chuck wagon racing, you have barrel racing, you have bareback riding, you have saddle bronc, and they all have cash prizes. So you have all these cowboys in from all over the world to compete at this rodeo. But then you also have art exhibits, and you have Western heritage events, and you have a midway, and you have this food that includes like deep fried scorpions, pickle ice cream, your classic mini donuts, obviously, which every year we got onto the grounds to get and bring back, because how can you do Stampede without mini donuts? You just can't. And then a few steps away from the actual Stampede grounds, we have this very large tent that is only pitched a few days of the year. We pitch a large tent at Cowboys. One might say it's the largest tent that's pitched in the city.
The largest tent that we've ever pitched.
It's a big tent, and we pitch it.
It's the largest tent in the city.
All hands. It is. We fill that tent. And we have events, you know, ranging from the cook-off on the patio to Snoop Dogg, and then we have our shows inside the club in Cowboys, which are this emotional experience because you're so close to the performers. And then when you're in the tent and you're at a show in the tent, you're sharing this event that's you're going to remember forever with thousands of other people, but it feels like they're all your best friends. Mm-hmm. And then you can step outside onto the patio at 4 p.m. on a Saturday and sit in the sun and get a sunburn and, you know, have two glasses of beer and be hammered because you're sitting in the sun and have really great food from all the food trucks. It's really a whole experience in itself. And there are people that travel from all over the world to attend Stampede and come to Cowboys. But crazy enough, there are people that travel from all over the world to work at Cowboys, which I think says a lot, because it's one thing to want to experience the venue and experience the things that are happening, but to want to work at the venue and provide people with that amazing experience that they're going to remember for the rest of their lives is something in and of itself, I think. And that's really what drew me to Cowboys, is that people all over the world know about it and it's a Calgary thing. And that, yeah, it really, really excites me. And it really resonates with me being able to share that experience, that one night or that, you know, 2 hours of your life with thousands of other people that went through the same thing that you did, but also still had a unique experience. Yeah, it's an amazing place, and everyone needs to attend Stampede, and specifically the Cowboy Stampede tent.
How has the current state of the world affected your training and your competition? And what's in store for you in the rest of 2021 and 2022, hopefully?
Yeah, good question. So it's definitely been an interesting year. I think Canada took a really conservative approach, which, you know, who knows what was right and what was wrong over the last little while, but Canada decided to keep us home from international competition for the first half. So that means anything before Christmas of 2020. And we really worked on, you know, personal development, athlete development, and just making the best of what we had. So we have an amazing facility here in Whistler, and we have a push facility in Calgary and an amazing gym there as well, which we had access to at some points. And at some points we didn't, but you know, we did what we could with what we had, which I think is the story of everyone for right now. But I was lucky enough to be able to travel to the States after Christmas. So I declined the opportunity to go to Europe, mostly for safety reasons. I just wasn't comfortable with, you know, the potential situation that could unfold, and decided to stay in North America, and was able to race for a couple of weeks in the States. We did actually get booted out of the States because of a rise in COVID cases in New York, which was wild. We were there, we raced, and then they literally said the night before the first day of our 2-day race that they're like, as soon as the race is in, you guys have to leave the county. And obviously we're, you know, we're not just going to leave the county for 10 days and then come back. And because it was this kind of weird 10-day thing. So we just ended up flying home and missing out on 2 weeks of sliding, but we were lucky enough that, so I did my rapid testing in Calgary and quarantined there, and then was able to come out to Whistler and enjoy the rest of the season here. The race was actually canceled. It was supposed to be happening next week because athletes, we're having a hard time getting into the country, and the 14-day quarantine is not very cost effective for athletes that are paying their own way in a sport with very minimal prize money. So yeah, it was definitely, it was a weird season, but I think it was a good season. And I think I saw a lot of personal development arise from what happened. And, you know, you really learn to persevere and push through. And as I already said, use what you have and really take advantage of what's actually at your disposal and make those decisions for yourself. So yeah, this year was some people are saying it was a write-off, but I would never say that. I think this year was just more of a building year, as we would say in hockey, you know, it was a building year for us. And then, yeah, we're going to slide in Whistler for a couple more weeks, and then we'll be headed into off season. And who knows what that's going to look like, because we don't know if our gym's going to be accessible. We have weights in our garage right now, but you can only do so much in the garage. And hopefully once it's warm enough, we'll get back onto the track outside, like the running track. And then, yeah, we don't know when our season's going to start up, because the test event in China for the brand new track was supposed to be at the end of this season. Obviously they had to postpone that. And so that is in October of this year. And we don't know how they're going to make team selections to get there. We don't know any logistics around that. But yeah, ideally I would get to go to the test event in China and have some runs on the Olympic track for 2022, go through team selection process, make the team, and then yeah, work my way towards the games in 2022. It's crazy that it's less than a year away. As an athlete, you're constantly facing adversity and constantly figuring out how to make these challenges benefit you and use them to your advantage. So yeah, COVID's just another one of those things that we're all unfortunately dealing with, and some of us are using it as a light rather than a darkness.
Speaking of like Olympics and all your competitions and everything, so how can someone support you directly or other Canadian athletes?
Checks can be payable to Madison Charney. You can e-transfer me. I'll give you my email. I'm not taking credit card at this time or debit. Yeah, really anyway. No, I don't have a Bitcoin wallet, but I could set one up. Like if you want to pay me in Bitcoin, I'll take Bitcoin. I will literally take any form of payment. So amateur athletes in Canada are supported to a certain extent, but it's not even enough to cover living expenses. So it's up to us to find our own personal sponsors and, you know, make money for the year, which is easier said than done. But each athlete has athlete properties on their suits and on their sleds, and they can sell those spots for advertising. But I'm really, honestly, I'm really open to any partnerships at this point. I have SportCheck on board, which is amazing. I'm a part-time associate there, and they have an athlete sponsorship program. SportCheck's been great. And then I'm able to work remotely at my new position. So I do have some income, but it's definitely not enough to keep my head above water some months. So yeah, there is an opportunity for partnership, whether it's product. I also really like to eat food. So if you want to just pay me in food, or you actually want to give me some dollars, yeah, gift card or real dollars. I will also take real dollars.
Really focusing on the real dollars.
Yeah. I mean, equipment's expensive. So my sled, I think it was around $5,000. And then you have to do customizations to that. And then every year you end up buying new runners. So the runners are those things in the bottom of the sled. And there's different cuts for different ice conditions. So you end up traveling with like 6 sets of those things, and they cost anywhere from $900 to $1,500. So yeah, things are not cheap in this sport, and you blow through your shoes so fast. Like our shoes are $300 and you blow through a pair every season. So
the more that people can help out, obviously we want to focus on you, but not just you, all Canadian athletes, because it is something that, you know, we are approaching at games and there are a lot mm-hmm. of athletes who are working their ass off to try and qualify and to stay in shape and to fight through the current state of everything. And I guess the more that we can do to help and bring some awareness to that, I think the better. So
yeah, awareness is a huge piece. And there are lots of organizations actually where you can just support athletes in general. For example, Athletes Can, and you get a tax donation from that, or individual groupings such as Bobsleigh Canada Skeleton, you can donate to that team and that goes to all the athletes on that team. And you also get a tax receipt for that. So tons of ways to do it and see a tax return from it. But you can also just raise awareness and watch on CBC, you know, follow us on Instagram, do all that good stuff to just kind of keep yourself engaged and keep awareness up of amateur athletes in Canada.
So Maddie, if someone is listening to this and thinking, hey, you know, I'd love to be a sponsor or I'd love to be a part of this, how do they reach out to you and how do they find you?
Hit me up on the gram, as the kids would say, at
your DMs.
Mads Rose. Yeah. You slide into my DMs. MADSROSE is my Instagram. If you message me on Twitter, I probably won't get back to you for like 6 months or so. So mm-hmm. yeah, I wouldn't go there. Instagram is the best way to reach me at this point.
You can send out sponsorship packages and things from there. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. And I will get on a Zoom call with you from wherever I am in the world and we can chat. I'll make a deal with you.
And Maddie, is that how anyone follows you if they're just looking for just to follow you and see more about your journey? Is that the best yes. spot to do things?
Yeah, Instagram is for sure the best spot. I'm on there the most. I'm working in social media marketing, so I love to test out things on my own Instagram. So yeah, I'm on there quite a bit. And then if you want to see race results and things like that, IBSF is our governing body for overall bobsleigh and skeleton, and they have all the races and all the race results up there.
Well, Maddie, I want to say thank you so much for coming on today. We are excited to watch you over the next little while and see how this next year goes, or next, mm-hmm. I guess, like year and a half. And hopefully we're able mm-hmm. to see you on the world stage here very, very soon. So,
yeah, thank you guys so much. Cowboys has been integral in my last 7 years, and I would probably be eating tuna out of a can more than 4 days a week, which is probably the amount I am right now. So, yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, you guys. It was awesome to just raise awareness for sport and talk about the amazing nights out that sport has brought me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Last Call Confessions. It would mean the world to us if you could make sure to give us a 5-star rating and a review on your favorite podcast streaming platform, as well as give our Instagram page at Last Call Confessions a follow. Don't forget, if you have a great party story you know we need to hear, make sure to DM us for the chance to have your story featured on an upcoming episode.